those things.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com.
I knew that.
The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
That would be moi. How you doing? It's May 18th, 2017. And this is OneRadioNetwork.com. We have open phones tomorrow. Sharon and I will be here. Be here or be square. Next week, what do we have here? Stephen Huer, Dr. Daniels, Andrew Goss, Dr. Massey's. Wow. Well, gotta say, that was an easy week to get guests for. They were already scheduled. Oh, great. Such a great producer, I tell you what. Well, our first guest, our scheduled guest, cannot be here this morning. Her internet thing didn't. Gave up. Quit. Bon. Good. An hour ago was fine. Now just, come on. How do you, you can't make that stuff up. Well, things happen. And so I just talked to Janet. She's going to come on early. She's getting her life together. And we'll be here soon. That's great. Live or live radio, what are you going to do? I guess it's better than dead radio, isn't it? Yes, yes, it is better than dead radio. We don't do dead radio. I had a really interesting experience yesterday with Dr. Faulkner. Or just 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, man, doodle just starts scratching. Mentioned it a couple times, and boy, she just a lot. I mean, just a lot. And playing around with some different things, and me, really was on top of the flea, so it wasn't the flea thing. Yeah, we really did a number with those fleas. I tell you, we use the Wonder Side. It's a really nice cedar-based thing. It really works. You can find it on Amazon. Go through our website, if you will, Wonder Side. It's a Texas company. It's made from cedar. Smells great. And then we used some of Gary Hanna's colloidal silver. I diluted my 6,000 parts per million thing down to 500 and sprayed that, and boy, that you could see a couple of those guys just fall off. They didn't like that colloidal silver at all. So that, I think this could be a real yeah, get some good colloidal silver from Nature's Pure Organics, and if you get the 750, you could dilute it down or just put a little bit in a spray bottle with maybe essential oil, drop or two, and if you got fleasies, and I think it would work on cats too. Well, don't do the essential oil on cats, but you could just do the straight colloidal, because it's just like a little bit of spray water, and I know they don't like water, but you could spray it on your hand and just run it through their little furzy, and I think it would really do something. Then we have about five of those flea traps that we have in our store. These are really cool. I mean, they're I think an amazing invention. They're white, you plug them in, and they're maybe 12 inches long, maybe not that, 10, 4 or 5 inches wide, with a little light on them. So they have a little night light. I have to turn mine off in my bedroom at night where Doodle sleeps, but it hasn't found many at all during the day. So it's kind of a cool thing, because you can tell how many fleasies are around. And you know, a month ago we had lots, and it just sticks to this paper. They jump in there and, you know, whoops, I'm stuck on you. And so you can get a pretty good idea of what you got going on. So boy, we cut down about 80% of them, just so you could see, or more, even more. But the scratching thing just didn't subside. So I suspect, who knows, you know, with these things, maybe allergic to the fleas or the flea bites or something. So I went to Dr. Faulkner yesterday. Normally just do stuff on the phone if I have a little thing. But he's close by, so he kind of wanted to see her just to look at the skin. And he's a cool guy. So we walked, we drove over there. He's in South Austin. And he talks to you for about half an hour, just figure it out. And he said, okay, I know. Well, let's try this. And you know what he gave her? Homeopathic dose of sulfur. And he said she may sleep a little more. And, so the thing with the homeopathic remedy, if you get a good doc like Dr. Faulkner, is then you really pay attention to all the symptoms and you even write them down every day. Well, on day one, I noticed this. On day one, day two, same. Really careful, everything. How they poop, if they scratch, any behavior. That's how a good homeopath works. And then they have a whole method of how to get to the root cause of the scratching, but it may take one or two remedies. And he said, and this works the same way in people when you get a good homeopath. This remedy could make something else pop up in a week, and then you get a different kind of loose stool or anything like that. It's just something weird. And then it could tell you something else about what's going on. Then they do another one, and then until all the symptoms go away. That's how a real homeopath works. People get these little blue tubes at the hippie food store, you know, and they start popping them. And, you know, generally, they don't do much because people don't know what they're doing. I mean, they're not going to hurt. You could do arnica and stuff like that. And you can get lucky and just get the right one and take one dose, and it can make it just go away. So she has scratched like 75% less in the last 18 hours. One hit of sulfur. I don't know. I think it was 30X. I think he said it was 30X. Now, homeopathic, of course, is different from the sulfur we promote. It's just the vibrations of something. So, it's different from just taking a little bit of something because it works on all different levels. But tell you what, if you can find yourself a good homeopath, Dr. Faulkner, he does. I don't know if he takes any new patients anymore. He's so busy, but he does everything by phone. But it's vitalanimal.com, vitalanimal.com. Then we had another gal, what's her name? Banker. It'll come to me. She's a friend of Dr. Faulkner, and she does the same thing. She was on the show about a month ago, right? What was her name? Anybody know? Anyway, vitalanimal.com. And then if you could find a really good homeopath just for you, it'd be cool. They're hard to find. I don't know. Well, it's just not a big deal in this country. I mean, they sell them and stuff, but there's not a lot of people that really know how to do it up, because it's a whole intuitive thing, very intuitive thing. Because you're dealing on all kinds of levels, you know, emotional, spiritual, physical, and you try to, and that's how you find something. If you just look in a book and say, let's do this and let's do that, it's a different thing, you know. You know what I mean, Jelly Bean? Okay, so that's my sulfur story, scratching story. So far now, this could change, you know, it could just change tomorrow. You just never know how these things work. You just got to pay attention all the time when you're doing it. Boy, it's hard to watch your little one scratch like that, isn't it? It's like, whoa, man, I tell you. We're going to call Janet. Janet Perry. You know, guys know, girls know Janet. She's really a great gal. And she's really going, doing good.
Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry.
How are you?
kind of, sort of. Good. Let's see. Okay. Got to get your sound working there a little bit here. We got a little.
Okay. Yeah. Tell me what I need to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, if I knew, once I get past reboot, man, I'm out of my league. Well, let's just try this.
Okay.
How are you, Janet?
I'm doing okay, Patrick. Now that I have my buttered coffee and out to pee, we're good.
Yeah, I emailed Janet. I said, our first guest, her internet thing went cattywampus, and emailed Janet. She said, well, I didn't get up very long ago, and I got to pee and get some coffee. And I said, well, take your time. We don't want to rush you. Janet Perry is a very well-informed lady. She's a pharmacologist. I met her when she worked at People's Pharmacy, and she's been helping people for years. She does consultations, right, Janet? You do consultations?
Consultations for people and pets and horses in nutrition and wellness.
You do horses too? Really?
I've long been involved with horses, and I have a good friend who does a equine therapy program for a nonprofit for eligible people, and we work with a lot of old horses in her program.
I'll be darned. What do you give What do you give those old horses to make them young horses?
Lots of love.
Lots of love. Give them the love. That's great. Oh man, horses live a long time, don't they?
They can. They can live well into their 20s.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was even longer than that. No.
I mean, there probably have been a few world record holders, but, you know, 30 is pretty old for a horse.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty old for a lot of people these days.
Yeah.
It's like...
Life on planet Earth, right?
That's right. Life on planet Earth. Is how old are you? Well, I'm 33. Really? Oh, okay. Well, all right. Janet had a... has had an interesting experience the last time. How long ago before somebody told you you had some cancer things running around in your little body? How long has it been?
About a year, April of last year.
Just a year, right? Just
a mm-hmm.
year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you went to the oncologist people, even though you're a natural girl, because you wanted to keep tabs on this from a contemporary medicine thing, right, for measurements and all that?
Well, yeah, testing, and there are some targeted immunotherapies that are not chemo, not radiation, not surgery, that aren't going to destroy your immune system and take away any chances of your immune system functioning after that first pass of chemo.
Yeah.
So the targeted immunotherapies, I believe that's what Carter used. A lot of people saw, his recovery. So that's becoming a larger and larger part of cancer treatment and medicine in general. It's genomic medicine.
President Carter?
Yeah, I believe so.
I'll be done. I didn't realize. So targeted immune therapy. So did you do some of that?
I have. I've done Herceptin a number of times. I'm on a 3-week schedule, and seems to be working as far as any of us can tell. And, doesn't seem to have, to me, really any side effects. There may be minor ones that, they monitor for, but I haven't personally experienced a huge downside to it. I just feel lucky that I have a sensitive population of markers on my cells that'll respond to a targeted immunotherapy. Not everybody has that.
Oh, you need sensitive markers, so they cry at movies and stuff.
sort of
sensitive markers. So targeted immune stuff, this is, so the contemporary oncologists are using these, and these are okay. They just boost your immune system.
Well, they specifically target certain receptors on certain cancer cells.
Ah, certain receptors.
It's not whole cell slash and burn like chemo or radiation is.
And so how do they tell which receptors you want to do?
Well, they looked at my cell population when I first got biopsied. They looked for this marker, and actually they didn't find it. It came back borderline, which they reported as negative, and so I thought I just didn't have it. And then I happened to get another, it was a new genomic sequencing test. I was just trying to find out how I could monitor my progress without using anything invasive like mammograms or bone scans. And just in asking, I found out about this test, and we started doing it every 3 months. Well, the first time we did it, the marker showed up, and I said, I thought I was negative for this marker. And I said, you know, the first test, the FISH test, said I was negative, and he just said it was wrong. It's like, why aren't we all using this one then? I guess because it's too new.
So a year later, what's the shape of those little cancer things on your breast? And they said there was different places too, not just a breast, right?
Oh, right. I have stage 4, so it's in bone, lung, lymph nodes near and distant, and then the primary tumor in my left breast below the root canal tooth.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about that. My,
that's just a coincidence.
So,
right?
surprise. So the root canal, but you got the root canal out now, right?
Right. The root canal tooth abscess, and I had it pulled, and a great oral surgeon, you know, he did a wonderful job taking the ligament out and doing all that great stuff that we hear about in biological dentistry. So that went very smoothly. And then about 4 or 5 months later, I noticed a lump in my breast, and it was large, and it came up fast.
So
I thought, this is kind of odd, and I thought, you know, this doesn't act like what I thought cancer would act like. So I thought, well, maybe it's just a cyst. I'd had fibrocystic breast disease before. And it was a little while before I thought, you know, I really need to go look into this. Not very much longer, but I did. I went and had a thermometry done, and found out the hard way that thermometry and thermography have a high incidence of false negatives, because I was told it was not cancer by the person administering the thermometry. And that was the answer I wanted to hear. So
I'll go with that. Right.
I didn't question it. so it was, let's see, that was probably 2013. So it was 2016, 3 years later, that I was having referred pain from a bone metastasis, and it ended me up in the ER because I thought, well, that's coming from around my ovary. I wonder if I'm bursting an ovarian cyst or something. I didn't know. I had heard stories. So I went into the ER, and the CAT scanned me and said, you know, as long as you're going to CAT scan me, why don't you, you know, scan me from the neck down? So they did, and they diagnosed stage 3 from that CAT scan in the ER. So that was a surprise.
Then you're off and running then. So the root canal, was it the one on the chart, Jen, that was tied in directly to the breast?
Uh-huh. I think it's number 32. No. It's on the left side. I don't remember the tooth number, but it when you look at the charts that say which ones... that's one. Mm-hmm. And I don't handle toxins well. You know, we've all found out more about our systems now that we've got, epigenetic typing and we've just knowledge. So I'm sure that I was struggling with toxins from that tooth the whole time.
Yeah, and you probably had. Well, we kind of conjecture that they're all bad all the time anyway, right? So root canals. And how long did you have it?
Oh, I had that root canal for a while, probably, I would say at least 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I'd been on the other side for a lot longer, and it was cracked. I look back at the original endodontist radiographs, and it was cracked from the beginning.
So where does your where's your little cancer cells? Where are they now compared to where they were a year ago? Because you've done a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot of different things, right? And taking a lot of different stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I bet you have. I can only imagine what you've been doing. Knowing you, I can only imagine what you've been doing. And we can talk about that.
See me swallow and ask him to swallow as well.
That's right. That's everybody swallow. Okay. What are we swallowing here? So where are you now? Like the last time but every time I've seen you, you look great and you tend to, you feel okay, huh? You feel good?
Yeah. I can feel the fatigue a little bit. And, yeah. You know, the day after an infusion, I can tell that, you know, my body's trying to remove some, probably, you know, die off products. You know, it's a little sluggish, but, overall I'm doing pretty well considering, I got a mild concussion last fall in an accident with an uninsured motorist.
Oh, good. That's what you need.
Never expected. And I had a good visit with my neurologist yesterday. He's starting to do some new therapies for traumatic brain injury, which I believe will help a lot. And we can talk about that later if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm tracking every 3 months the percent of cancer DNA in my blood.
Yeah.
With this new test called the Guardant 360 from Guardant Health. And I can watch that, you know, every 3 months go up or down or stay the same. And it was fairly high when we first did it. And then 3.5 months later, it was zero, which really got the attention of my first oncologist, because, you know, he just doesn't believe in natural medicine being able to do that. Yeah. So he was quite impressed. And then I've seen it go up a little bit under stress. Not a big blip, but a blip back in December.
How are you doing? You can see it go right up.
A little bit, you know, because cancer is not in a steady state and it's constantly adapting.
Yes.
As much as possible to its environment or whatever you're throwing at it. And some things it can start to become immune to. And I've heard people say, you know, I couldn't use that for a couple of years. Now I can use it again.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds to me kind of like resistance in bacteria, but I think the mechanism's a little different. But, you know, so I keep watching that test every 3 months. The oncologist that I see regularly, my treating oncologist, he actually physically measures the primary tumor each time.
Yeah.
And the same time I saw a blip back in December, he saw a slight increase in the measurement. But most, we're doing 9-week intervals now, but up until last time it was 6 weeks. And he was usually measuring a decrease in the size.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's also reported that I have really good blood values. Like, I'm not struggling with my hemoglobin. It's doing great. And I'm not struggling with the strength of my veins. I don't have a port for IVs. I just go straight into different veins, move it around so we don't build up scar tissue. But overall, my health is good.
Yeah. And so what's the process? Do these cancer cells, just the body just keeps working with them, do we think, that they'll eventually then they just go away? Or whatever they do, or give up, or how does it work? Do we know?
I wish I knew more. I've talked to the geneticist at the Guardant Health every time I've gotten a test, and she's very generous with her time. And so each time I talk to her, I have more and more detailed questions. And we're now down to that level where it's like, you guys have a book on this? I really need to study this. She goes, there's no book yet. There's some papers. The way the genetics works is kind of tricky. It's not like we would normally think from other cell markers that we're familiar with, like blood type or, you know, other receptors. And I don't even want to get into it because I'll say something wrong.
Yeah.
I'm still not that fully informed on how all of this works. I think it's pretty complex.
Yeah.
But most of the time I'm told, you know, if you feel good, you're doing well, And if you don't have pain, you're doing well. So you know how well you're doing by how you feel. So that was what I was told in the beginning. And I just kept going after it, like, no, there's got to be a way. There's got to be a more objective way to measure my progress or lack thereof from visit to visit. So both oncologists and I kind of went through a process of, you know, what could we do that's not invasive? You know, no mammograms. I don't want a bone scan. I don't want to expose myself to more radiation if I don't have to. So we played around with comparing sonograms. That really wasn't consistent enough. The one doctor that measures the primary tumor, that's pretty consistent. He feels, you know, like he's getting it, because he does this for everybody, so he's very practiced at how he takes his measurements. And then the blood cancer DNA test is pretty impressive for comparing progress, you know, from test to test. And that's, you know, I think that's about all we've got, other than if you're all of your blood values are tanking, you know, if your liver enzymes go up and your tumor markers, the tumor markers are not an absolute measure of progress, because they go up whether the tumors are growing or dying. They go up anytime there's more of the tumor antigen in the blood.
Oh.
That happens when tumors are growing or dying. The blood cancer DNA only goes up when the tumors are growing. So if the blood cancer DNA is zero, that means you've stopped all tumor growth that's within the range of that test, which I believe is 0.01%. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty sensitive level. So basically what you're looking for is the comparison to the test before it, maybe the test after it. What's the general trend? Where's it going? And then your pain level. But there's a lot of things you can do to help slow down the pain, a lot of natural things that you can do that will stop the pain signal.
Janet Perry is with us. Quite a great story. And you're gonna have the whole thing, as you just, once you, your body totally heals and balances with everything, you're going to have a great story. You'd be able to write a book or something to really help people, right? You'd be able to really help ladies with breast cancer.
I think everything that happens to us in life is for a reason. You know, there are no accidents. And once you get over that initial, you know, then you can start dealing with it from, okay, what am I learning? What's the purpose? There's always something good, you know, and just, you know, move through it with that confidence that it's part of, you know, the way things work here.
Yeah. On this here planet, that's a great attitude.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great attitude. And it's all about lessons, isn't it? And yeah, well, good for you. Okay, stay right there, and we'll continue to talk to you with Janet this morning. Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. If you care to participate, please jump in. It is the 18th of May, 2017, OneRadioNetwork.com. I mentioned the little thing, the homeopathic sulfur with Dr. Falconer and doodle scratching. It's just pretty amazing. Now, it is different from the sulfur that we promote, of course. Homeopathics are a whole nother thing. It's just a whole nother thing, even though it's the same mineral. But sulfur is generally known just in the genre for hair, skin, and nails. And one of the beauty minerals. David Wolf always talked about sulfur being one of the beauty minerals. So it's good for your skin and your hair and your nails. And people, I remember the first time I took this pure organic sulfur, and it's been 3 years ago, or more than that, 3.5 years ago. I mean, within 3 or 4 days, I could tell my nails just got amazingly just harder. I remember talking about it on the air. It was pretty crazy. And I don't do it every day now, and my nails, they just stay there. I think I filled up, after about 3 years, I filled up a lot on my sulfur, and I can just tell how much, when I need it and how much I need. It just depends on your body and what your diet is like. And some folks, we generally recommend about a teaspoon, say for 100 per 100 pounds or so. And then you can go up from there, a teaspoon and a half, 2 teaspoons. And then some people get detox effects right away. as I've had not a lot, but several emails over the years, and boy, I really feel terrible, and they just keep taking, and then they feel a lot better. Some folks will put it into their doggy bowls, but we recommend that you have a separate bowl. So if you want to put a little bit in a separate bowl of water, and if your dog wants to take a little, they will. If they feel they need it, they're smarter than we are about these things. And if they don't, then they just won't drink it, and that's cool. I wouldn't put it in there just because you think it's good. That's just not a good idea with anything, with our bodies, you know. Well, I'll just give it to my cat. There's nothing wrong with him or dog, and the animals are very, it's a different thing with animals and people. We do a lot of things because we try it, and then if it works, fine, and we can tell, and we don't do it anymore. With animals, they use real instinctual things, and generally, if they don't want to eat it or drink it, they don't want it, and they don't need it, and that's what I go with. And you're usually on more solid ground there, you know, because they know what they're doing. But we peoples, you know, we'll try stuff just from the mental level, because you hear a guy like me talking about it, so yeah, I'll try some of that. It really is a fun product. It is organic, sulfur, pure, and it is from OneRadioNetwork.com. Hey, you guys, you dudes, we recently talked to Daniel Vitalis about testosterone.
So many men today are reaching an age where they begin something we call andropause, and this is the equivalent, male equivalent of menopause. So we know women go through menopause, but less understood in the mainstream is the idea that men go through andropause. And so they hit a certain age, but men start to really drop off in their hormone production. So what a lot of people are using is drug forms of hormones. And as always, when you extract a drug and you give it to somebody, you create more imbalance. The drug is found usually in nature, but it's found with a suite of other substances that support its metabolism and keep our bodies healthy. So one of the medicines on our landscape that can be incredibly useful for this is the pollen from pine trees, because it helps to increase those anabolic hormones in the male body and helps to keep a male whose hormones have naturally started to drop up.
Thanks, Daniel. When you click on SirThrival through our website, One Radio Network, you'll see a couple of choices. The four P's has some different herbs and a little more kicking your giddy up. And then the regular gold pine pollen is there for you on any SirThrival link on OneRadioNetwork.com. That's an important thing to remember, even for myself, as well as I'm always mentioning testosterone, because, you know, that's the big one. That, you know, it's just it's the mother load kind of thing, that for just more mojo and all that stuff. But it just helps all of the body functions just be more bodily functional. That's a good way to put it. And that's the same place. If you'd like to try the elk velvet antler, the colostrum, and the shaga and the reishi, well, you can do that, and you'll have a good time. If you're interested in exploring and playing around with some colloidal gold, silver, copper, selenium, it's in a monoatomic form, which is 3 million times smaller than nano. We believe that the nanotechnology is, for the most part, not good. One of these things that happened pretty quickly. Everybody said, oh, nano is better. So everybody did nano. And now we're finding out that, nope, maybe not. And it's not just Tony Pantelarsko, who's on here once a month, but it's a lot of people we run into, including Gary Hanna, who makes the monoatomic. And there's research, and you can do it if you want to. But this nano stuff can get clogged up in your body and start messing around with your different genes and DNA. And it's pretty strange. So you want to be careful. Most of the colloidal silvers out there are nano. And the one that we promote with Gary Hanna is monoatomic. And he generally, you can get one 750 parts per million, gold or silver or copper. That's crazy high. You go online and most of them are 300 or 400. Well, most of them are 100 or 50 or 10. I think the most popular one is like 10 parts per million. Can you imagine the difference there? Yeah, I've nebulized a little bit of the 6,000 parts per million. And I'll tell you what, it's your lungs know it's interesting. And you can play around with it. Silver, copper is interesting and learn more about it. But just the silver, and you can get the 750 and then dilute it, because lots of things don't need that high. You can do, you know, maybe 50 or 100, just diluting it with the distilled water for if you want to do it in a neti pot or something like that. Or I've seen some really good things with the with Doodle and the fleas I mentioned, at about 500 parts per million, which is really high. But she had them running around about 6 weeks ago pretty good. And boy, they didn't like it. The fleas didn't like it at all. So we have a link right on the front page, Nature's Pure Organics. I mentioned that we sent you, or you can just go to Nature's Pure Organics and call them up, the same thing, and just tell Gary we sent you. And I think you'll have fun playing with this these products. They're really good. And the clay, it's amazing. The 5-blend clay, check that out.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Stars shining bright above you, night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree, dream a little dream of me.
Say nighty night and kiss me, just hold me tight and tell me you miss me. While I'm alone and blue as can be, dream a little dream of me.
To talk to Patrick, call 888-663-6386 or email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
Well, it doesn't get much better than that, Katie Lang and Tony Bennett. Wow. Two of the best all-time crooners of the world, Katie Lang and Tony Bennett. Tony Bennett's still going. I think he's 90 revolutions around the sun, and he looks great, and he's still performing. Wonder what Tony's doing, Janet. We should probably call him and say, "What do you got going on, dude?"
I bet you anything, for most of these long-lived people, it is in the genes. Mm-hmm. It's their genetics.
Can you get those?
I know my genetics is what's taken me down.
Oh, no kidding. So, yeah, so some folks, your genetics, you came in and you kind of had genetic karma to, so you could, well, that's why you got in the health field, because you knew you had to get creative.
I guess so.
See, there you go.
See, that's cool, the way things work like that.
Isn't that cool how it comes? Let's just send Janet in. Let's just make a few of her genes all cattywampus, because we need her to be in the health thing. And see, I think that's how it works. See, but
I do too.
That's just me. You know, call me crazy. Well, let's talk about some of the things I can only imagine that you've been doing the last year as far as nutritional foods, cleansing, stuff like that. Give us the rundown of some of the things that you can attribute to your healing, which is going great.
So low sugar.
Low sugar. So cancer, yeah. Cancer eats sugar, huh?
Cancer prefers sugar as a fuel source, and it ferments it rather than burning it with oxygen, which is not good for us, the byproducts that are produced. So if we can interfere with cancer glycolysis by, you know, depriving it of sugar or blocking that pathway, that helps. And I did that pretty early on. I used fermented wheat germ, which is a source of benzoquinones, and that's what blocks glycolysis in cancer cells. And that's something that I learned to make rather than purchase, because it's an expensive product to buy, like so many products. You know, they have costs that we don't have when we're making our own. So I fermented my own wheat germ and was taking it two or three times a day.
And what's the idea, Janet, of fermenting it?
When you ferment it in a certain way, it it produces benzoquinones, which is, you know, it's just a fancy word from stops sugar from digesting inside a cancer cell.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So even if you had a little sugar, you go to Amy's Ice Cream some Friday night. It's a big here in Austin, Amy's Ice Cream. Yeah, just something. Then it helps to keep the sugar out of the cancer cells so they don't party down.
It helps. I don't know that it keeps the sugar out of the cell.
Okay.
Because I haven't done the research, and you know me, I have to I'm going to say. But it does stop the cancer cell from being able to digest the sugar.
Okay. Can't digest.
Cancer cells have a lot of insulin receptors on them. In fact, they use that fact in some, I believe, mainly alternative therapies to get some drugs inside the cancer cell. And I actually used that fact to get molasses and baking soda inside the cell to alkalize the cancer cell. So you can use sugar as a Trojan horse in some therapies.
So there are insulin
the cancer cell surface has a large number of insulin receptors on it.
So the connection to sugar and cancerous cells is pretty well known. It's not theory. We know it's there, right?
Yes, we know that it's there, although there's some question about whether cancer cells can also utilize ketones.
Mm-hmm.
If you dig into the literature, you'll find some that says to a certain extent they can, but not anything like the way they use sugar. So since the 50s, eating a ketogenic diet has been a treatment for cancer.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned I saw Dr. Falconer for Doodle yesterday. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me about a place in North Austin. I think it's called Keto Pet. And they're bringing dogs in from all around with cancer and having really good success putting the dogs on a ketogenic diet.
Sure. I mean, to me, that seems more like their natural diet anyway, right?
Well, let's see. Well, sure. I mean, of course, because raw meat would be part of a ketogenic diet, right?
Well, meat in general.
Yeah, and meat and fat, right?
That's very low carb, which, you know, in the wild, they wouldn't have a lot of access to carbs. A wolf or, you know, an evolving dog.
Of course.
You know, it's not like where we live, where we can go into a bakery every 3 miles and, you know, then there's a Starbucks with all, you know.
Yeah, so what they're doing, I guess I shouldn't, I didn't really connect up the dots as well as I should have, like you did, is they're simply putting dogs on a more normal diet, right? They're carnivores.
Right.
Yeah, they're just putting them on probably just meat and fat and meat, right?
The raw diet is 10% meaty bones, 10% raw organ meats, and basically 80% muscle meat. So there's a certain ratio to it. You can't just throw, you know, a steak at them every night. They need other things besides muscle meat.
But. That's right. Yeah, I like to do raw chicken wings. You know, so you get a lot of skin and bones, and then the and the organs, and then the muscle. Yeah, just pure muscle. Yeah, I just pulled this up. It's pretty interesting. Human grade cancer therapy for dogs, 53 acres outside of Austin. Keto Pet. We should probably. Find somebody there and talk to them a little bit and see what they're up to. Interesting.
I think they do have hyperbaric oxygen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what he mentioned too. They do hyperbaric oxygen chamber. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you know, if cancer cells are metabolizing anaerobically without oxygen and fermenting the sugar, you know, rather than oxidizing and digesting it, then it makes sense that, you know, if you put in some oxygen, more oxygen, then it's going to shift that whole it's going to shut the fermentation process off.
Mm-hmm. This website is ketopetsanctuary.com, ketopetsanctuary.com, if you'd like to look at it. Yeah, well, I suspect, I mean, I have no idea, I'm just making this up, but if I was on a game show and I knew, said they knew the right answer, I would think that all of these kibble foods and all the foods, you know, they all have, most of them, don't they all, not all, but most of them, except the really, really good ones, have grains in there. And I don't think that's a very natural thing for dogs, is it?
No, grains are problematic for dogs just like they are for people, but carbs too. They can not have grains and still have more carbs than a dog really is evolved to handle.
Vegetable or fruit, right? They don't need it.
You just have to look at the labels. I've seen huge differences when I've switched to raw feeding from a no-grain, high-quality kibble to raw feeding. You can just see the difference within a week.
Yeah. Yeah. The raw thing is, phew. Yeah. Yeah. So fermented wheat germ is one of the natural things, or one of the cool. So what are some of the other things you started doing a year ago with this stage four cancer?
Well, one of the first things I did was the molasses and baking soda protocol, because I had it right there in my kitchen. Had a bunch of organic molasses, and I think some people use maple syrup, but I prefer the molasses for the mineral content, and I think it's a less expensive. So I went to cancertutor.com and looked up the protocol and followed it, and immediately, you know, went full tilt with that protocol. I was taking maximum amounts throughout the day, and also monitoring my pH, making sure I wasn't shifting it too far alkaline.
So what does it do? Give us a little, just the broad strokes of the protocol.
You're in this protocol, you're warming the molasses over a double boiler and then putting the baking soda in there, being careful not to get it too hot, kind of cooking it down and setting it aside in a jar to dip into two or three times a day. So that's supposed to be kind of hooking the molasses and the baking soda up together, so that when the cancer cells sees the sugar and goes, oh, I want that, and lets it in, just like the Trojan horse, it's dragging the baking soda in with it and causing the cancer cell to become more alkaline, which kills it.
Yeah. That's the whole idea of alkalinity, you know, that whole meme. Of course, it's not just totally black and white, and dogmatic is better than acid, right? And, yeah.
Yeah, if you're staying in an acidic state by your diet or stress level, cortisol will do that to you. That's where stress comes in, and that's where genetics can come in too, because some of us are less stress resilient due to our genetics. So you see more incidence of cancer and other degenerative disorders in that population, which is about 25% of the population has that genetics.
So you did the wheat germ, then the molasses, and then what else?
Getting sunlight.
Just
morning. Yeah, just every morning getting out. And I like standing on the bare earth in my you know, feet to get some of that good grounding energy. I started growing wheatgrass juice or wheatgrass sprouts to make into juice, so that you know, I had a steady supply of probably one of the best juices you could drink every morning. And I thought, well, this is also going to get me more in touch with, you know, growing things, you know, having my hands in a growing organism, this wheatgrass. So I was growing it out on my back porch and really enjoying just the experience of growing it. It's a little challenging over time, because you can develop some issues with mold, but I think I've found some solutions for that. But wheatgrass, from what I was learning, is one of the best sources of vitamin C. It's got a lot of protein. It's got chlorophyll, which is great for us. You know, minerals. It's just one of the best things we can do. And so it was something to focus on for me, and something that I could put my own intention into.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I love this wheatgrass as it's growing, and then it's going to love me by nurturing my body. And it just sets up a cycle of positivity and energy, where you're not focused on negative outcomes or negative experiences or it being out of your control. It puts it all back in your control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important.
Yeah, that's well said. So the idea, similar to a lot of fun things we do when we structure our water, you know, with writing stuff on the container and talking to it or structuring it, you know, all these different things, blessing the food, all of these positive intentions being the cause and not the effect. All right. And so that builds, that energy builds, doesn't it?
The energy builds and the skill builds. So it's kind of like learning any skill. At first, it feels unfamiliar and you're kind of clumsy with it. But, you know, as time goes on, it's automatic.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of automatically jumping to the negative mindset or the negative judgment, you're training yourself that, oh, there's always a positive in there. Find the positive. And, you know, it's like the gratitude practice. It just, it puts you in a more creative state, and you're creating positive processes in your life. And we definitely create with our thoughts and our expectations.
Yes. Double yes. Okay. What else? What other kind of? So you did wheatgrass and that. So what other kind of things? Did you take a lot of like isolated substances, nutrients? In other words, mineral. I mean, I don't know.
You know, being a nutritionist and having ready access to all of those things, of course I did, and I still do. But it's worth reviewing with someone who's very well informed what you're going to take. Because, for instance, I just found out yesterday when I was visiting my neurologist that I shouldn't be taking GABA. It's a problem for me because of my genetics. I have the GAD1 mutation, and I can't deal with excess glutamate, and GABA is part of that pathway. So rather than helping me sleep, it was probably disturbing my sleep.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because some years ago, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, I think Dr. Massey had suggested, because I was having wonky sleep, he mentioned GABA, and I tried it, and the first night it was like made it worse. So mm-hmm. So something like that could be going on with a lot of people with different, that's why some things work and some things don't for others, right?
That's why we're all, you know, uniquely different, depending on what our genetics is and also depending on what our current circumstances and mindset are.
Uh-huh. What we believe. Yeah.
Things. Well, you're stressing, for instance, you're dumping magnesium. You know, if you're not stressing, you're probably not burning through as much magnesium. I mean, that's a very oversimplified example, but you know, that's not even based on genetics. That's just based on your stress level.
Right. Now, you learned a lot of this genetic stuff from the 23andMe?
Yes. That was one of the best things I ever did. I've had people tell me, oh, you know, I've been told not to do that because the government will then know, you know, what genetics is. And I'm thinking, have you seen Gattaca? I mean, if they find your eyelash, they can tell what your genetics is. You know, you're not hiding anything. You know, if they want to know where your flaws are, believe me, they will know.
Did it take you a long time to learn how to decipher that thing? It's kind of like a Da Vinci code, isn't it?
You have to have somebody, you know, well-versed in what it means. Hmm. And, you know, I think it's impractical to think that somebody's going to look down at your results and be able to tell you everything there is to know. They're going to focus in on certain issues that they deal with or that might be related to what's happening to you that brought you into their office. But I did upload the results from 23andMe to a website called livewello.com. And I think it's like $20, but they put it in a more readable format. And then when my neurologist was evaluating me after a car accident, he brought up my epigenetics, and I said, oh, I've already had it done. So he was able to just go up to, you know, my account on LiveWello, download it, and we were off and running.
I'll
you know,
be he, done. That's good.
Immediately had pertinent information about what I needed as an individual for my treatment.
What's the name of that place? Live what?
Livewello.com. It's pretty well known.
Wello?
Livewello.com.
I'll be done. And you just download this stuff from 23andMe, and then it kind of makes it easier to try to figure out stuff.
It's just in a more readable format. It's just a fancier printout. And anybody that hears people talking about, you know, certain, you know, GAD1 or MTHFR, once they put it up on Livewello and have it, you know, run through that interpretation, they'll be able to find those in their results themselves. Uh-huh. They might not know exactly what to do about it, but they can say, oh, yeah, here I am. I have the GAD1, you know, or I have MTHFR. And they, you know, they'll probably already know by some symptoms, but they won't recognize that that's, you know, what it's originating with.
As you know, I'm kind of crazy, and I think as soul, we can learn, and we do change these things too. That's my theory. These markers.
Well, you can certainly turn them off.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. You either turn them off or turn them on, or.
I'm not sure you can turn every single one of them off, but originally when we first started hearing about epigenetics, we were told once it's turned on, it can't be turned off. And then a few years later, like so many other things in science, they were like, oh, well, that's not exactly right.
Yeah, that's right. When people say this kind of stuff, well, they don't know. They just make it up, you know.
It's the limit of their knowledge in that moment.
That's right. The beaker.
So that's okay. You know, everybody has, you know, none of us have X-ray vision yet, as far as I know, unless, you know, that's in the works. But we all have to be able to say, oh, okay, that was yesterday. Today we have this new information. We need to consider it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And the world is our oyster for sure. Janet Perry is with us. If you would like to join the conversation, we have some interesting emails coming in for her. She's a pharmacologist, knows a lot of stuff about nutrition, and right now her body is working its way back to a balance after being diagnosed with stage 4 cancer about a year ago, a little over a year ago. Janet Perry, she's in Austin, OneRadioNetwork.com. Let's do a little station thing here.